Well, welcome to Fire Service Court Radio. A riveting discussion will be had today by the Kurt or the Chip and the John show because of the Kurt and the Brad part of it are not here. They're probably off doing some lawyerly stuff. And every time Chip and I come on, it's like, you know, we know what Chip does, but we have no idea what Murphy does because he's always not in his office. He's sitting in a window that's looks at elk and deer and poor old Chip's slaving away until midnight, burning the midnight oil. So
in the mob.
That's right. The last time I think we were on, I was lamenting about, you know, we do all these classes and people still violate the law. And Kurt brought up the fact that it's not our clients that violate the law. It's everybody else. And thank God for that. Cause it's almost like a lawyer's right to work, activities on your part. So we appreciate, you know, violating laws and the codes as much as you can, because it keeps us all in business. But today we're going to talk about what appears on the surface to be a mundane sort of topic. But when you get down into the nitty gritty of it all, it's really important as it deals with managing records and public records and those sorts of things, where your fire department is a repository for a determinant amount of time to create and manage, preserve, and destroy a record. So there's that whole stepping stones of, you know, how do you create a record? Why do you create a record? Where does it go? Who can see it? How long do you have to keep it? And then how do you get rid of it? So, and it all came from an article that I think has been in the paper and certainly on Kurt Verone's blog site, and I'll give him a cheap advertisement for that. It's the firelogblog.com, which almost every day there's something in there that deals with legal issues affecting the fire service. And so if you're interested, I'd go over and take a look at stuff that goes on, because certainly in a class that I teach down at the University of Florida, that's a lot of research and online stuff. And so the class looks at, you know, that site and other sites for, you know, the more current legal issues. Where the textbooks, you know, that I wrote was in 2015. And so the materials are pertinent, but the case law is, you know, sort of outdated. And so you need to have those reference sites to take a look at it. So if you're interested, take a look at his site. So the whole thing that sort of brings this topic to head, which to the lawyers, it's a good thing because we are always looking at records. And so, you know, we do, when your department's getting sued, you know, we're suing somebody, there's a records preservation request that goes out to, you know, you can't get rid of pictures and, you know, all of the correspondence that goes on, and certainly records that you create in medical calls or fire calls or inspections or arson cases or, you know, incidents that may occur in the station or out of the station. And so this whole topic, I think, was predicated on this article, and it's a New York issue. So the volunteer firefighter, I'm not going to name the department, was charged with tampering with public records and official misconduct, a district attorney indicated. So there is a firefighter arrested Wednesday and charged with first-degree tampering with public records, which is a Class D felony, and official misconduct, which is a misdemeanor in this particular county. And so the whole thing was based on the firefighter was accused of making 96 false entries in the electronic records of the fire department, giving himself and his family members credit for attending emergency calls they did not actually attend. And so this goes into a whole raft of issues. And one of the things they pointed out was in this particular state, they have a LOSEP program for retirement as volunteers. And so, you know, creating a false record saying you were got accounted for all of these particular calls adds a value credit to your LOSEP program, which is in essentially stealing money from a public institution. And so when Chip and I were talking about, you know, how are we going to formulate this, Chip, you know, is from Ohio, and the Ohio Attorney General's office has a manual on records, what a record consists of, what it looks like, how long do you have to keep it. And so the Ohio Sunshine Law that Chip just put up, most states have a records management law. I know the Washington state does. refer to that all the time. Like, and I said earlier, how do you create a record? Why do you create a record? Where does it go? How's it stored? Who can see it? You know, and all that sort of stuff. So, and we're going to talk a little bit about that through this riveting conversation here about public records. So, anyway, I just want to say that, you know, there's a serious harm done to this fire company based on this member's falsification of records, which benefited him and family members. And so you wonder, you know, how often does this happen? And then, you know, how often are the attorneys incorporated into this, you know, these sort of falsification of records issues? And as I was telling Chip earlier, we look at, as attorneys, we look at records all the time. And so if there's a medical malpractice case or there's a vehicle accident, for an example, we'll take a look at, you know, your EMT training, your paramedic training. How long has it gone back? How often do you recertify? We look at all your training records. And the same thing with motor vehicle accidents. If you wreck a piece of equipment, and you're criminally charged or civilly charged, you know, your attorneys representing your organization are going to ask for your driving records, your training records. You know, who are the trainers? Are they certified and qualified? I mean, we have to deep dive into the records aspect of it. And so thank God today they're pretty much all electronic, which has its own hazards. But back in the day, they used to be all on paper. And so we had reams of files of paper. We had files stored in the attic. I've done records requests where I go in and they plop a box down in front of me. And it's nearly that I have to put a biohazard suit on, level A, because of all of the pigeon crap, the rat feces, the mold, the rain, and all that sort of stuff has basically turned these paper records into a ball of nothing. So, you know, there are no records. So we're going to talk a little bit about that too. So, I've taken up at least the first 10 minutes of here just palavering, but I just want to sort of set the stage when we talk about public records and what it means and how you define a public record. And I'm going to turn that over to Chip and his Sunshine Manual.
Well, you know, I'm going to add this right off the bat. And thanks, John. I've had some of my clients tell me, we're going to modernize our records storage. We're going to make it all electronic. And my reaction to that is always, that's a great idea. Are you putting your records on microfiche or floppy disk? And reason for that, you know, we've taken technology at various times and have tried to condense our storage. And again, microfiche was the answer. Right. But then it became outdated, and then floppy disk, and then, you know, then we're going to do something else, and then it's going to be on thumb drives. And, you know, now it's cloud storage. And I think that we have to recognize that the one drawback with technology and electronics is it changes over time. Whereas if you do have a good paper management process, it really will last forever. But the downside is it really does take up a ton of space. Mm-hmm. And those records may not be retrievable as quickly as they would electronically, where you can do searches. So I think that it is good that we start modernizing, but I think we also have to understand that depending on how long you really need to keep that record, is it going to outlast the mechanism by which you're storing it? Again, if you only need to store a record 5 or 10 years, it's probably fine to modernize. But if it's something you need for 50 or 100 years, it may be something you need to keep on paper. Well, John, like you said, this can be a nightmare. And, you know, we don't the problem with a lot of things in the fire service is we have so much to do and so little time to do it. And I've been to, you know, FDIC, other fire engineering, seminars or get-togethers where people talk about what we need to spend our time on because we have limited time. So we talk about, operational items, whether it's, you know, hazmat or, WMG, weapons of mass destruction. We can talk about, you know, just plain everyday EMS and fire attack matters, building construction, all these things that keep us alive. And then people start hearing about, diversity or harassment or other, I'll call it more administrative topics. And they're like, we don't have time for that. You know, we need to be focused on what keeps us alive. People, we don't have enough time to spend it on even some of the interpersonal legal issues that are important. And then we get to records management. And the issue with records management is it's not going to cost anybody life if we screw it up. But it can cost the department a lot of money. And as you've just indicated, depending on the personal level, somebody screws it up intentionally or recklessly, could end up in jail. And so people have to at least be cognizant on the administrative level that it is important that we understand, the records laws in each state, and they are different in each state, and that we do our best to follow the laws, to manage the records and to preserve the records, and if necessary, destroy the records in accordance with those laws. So having said that, a couple of things that I think we can talk about a little bit. And again, every state's different. So, from the most part, I'm going to share some of the stories in Ohio, John with Washington, or, where he's been elsewhere within the country. But the first question, and again, I run down the list as we examine in Ohio, is, what's a public office? Because we talk about public records. So the record, if we're concerned about it, has to come from a public institution. And sometimes that's easier to designate. We can talk about, from the state of New York or Ohio, or it's from a county or from a city. That's fine. But what happens if it's from your fire department, you have a foundation, or you're a nonprofit corporation? That's been a topic as recently as 2024 in Ohio. I thought it was settled, but we had an Ohio Supreme Court case that addressed, is a record from a nonprofit fire department a public record? The answer in Ohio is yes, it is. But other states, it may not be so clear. And again, if you have a group, it's not there's been ad hoc committees formed to accomplish certain tasks, fundraising, other things, that have ties to the government, but aren't necessarily government institution itself. And again, that may be subject to a challenge where somebody wants a record from that, and that organization saying, we're not a public entity, we don't have to give it to you. So I don't know if you've had any experience with that particular issue, of seeing that come up, John, with any of the things that you've been involved.
Well, I think that in Washington state, there are no private fire companies that we have to deal with. But you're right. I think with nonprofits, I was a board member of a local hospital for about 10 years. And so they, they have a lot of obligations as a public institution, but
right,
they're a private nonprofit. And so, there is always a struggle on records requests, budget requests, how much money you're spending, how much money you're getting from Medicare, how many medical claims are you writing off? And those things are pretty much held tightly to the vest. And so every time there's a records request that comes in, the attorneys will sort of deliberate over, take a look at current state law and say, well, we can release this part, but we can release this part, because this part comes from maybe federal or state funds. And so certainly, because the source of the funding is a public issue, as opposed to, donations, contributions, and other sort of fundraising things, we don't have to disclose that sort of stuff. So there's sort of a struggle in those sort of organizations.
And again, Ohio's similar in that if you're a nonprofit and taking public funds, those documents tied to the public funds may arguably be released. And again, you're not, to the original point, you're not a public organization, right? You're sort of this quasi. We talk about in Ohio as a functional equivalent. A private fire company was deemed a functional equivalent of, right, a public entity. So that's the public office. And then the next part is, I think you led into it, which is, if assuming that it's a public office or it's subject to the public records laws, what is a public record, right? What all are encompassing in a public record. And as you said, well, that we know that certain documents of a nonprofit may be subject if they receive public money. But then we talk about what are all the things that may be public record. And we start off, well, the easy thing, we have a fire department, we have a run report, right? That's a public record. So, you know, here's this piece of paper that we have. But, you know, what are the other things that may be public records that people don't think about?
Well, I think that, you know, again, I have a new hat, so I'm going to wear my hat as a fire commissioner in the fire district, not the organization I retired from, but closely associated with it. And so the fire commissioners group is a public entity. So if people want to come in and request records, they have to do a records request, you know, under the state law here in Washington as a public records request. And we have a form for the federal government. So it's a FOIA request. So there's that sort of process that they go through. But for fire districts and fire in our state, my state, all the fire departments are public entities. So all the records that we create, and that's like everything. So it incorporates not only run reports, but investigative reports. I'm going to leave out personnel investigations and personnel files. I'm going to leave out a portion of inspection, not so much inspection, but investigations. Like, so if you have an arson investigation or a complaint from a public individual, because you have a burn barrel in your backyard and you're pissed off because it's smelling up the neighborhood, you know, we can say, yes, we're investigating that, but they generally don't report that it was, you know, Chip Comstock that reported John Murphy's burn barrel.
Well, but in Washington, that I'm pissed off at whatever, and you make a complaint to the department or district, is that complaint, is the investigation itself, or the inspection records, are those not public records?
I'm sorry, let me stop. Let me say,
in Ohio,
the records that you did an investigation, received a report, a public records, naming the complainant is not.
See, in Ohio, everything you named is a public record. All right. And that's where I wanted to bring this up, that again, we get back to, unlike, you know, how we attack a fire with, you know, whatever size hose line, it's sort of consistent across the country. You know, laws are so different in every state. And so in Ohio, almost everything is a public record, but there may be exceptions to its release. So, for example, if you have a public adoption agency, that it's a public agency, its records are public records. Adoption records would be public records, but they're not. The law says none of those records are subject to release to the public. So they create an exemption to release under certain items, or there may be documents that are relevant, but you have to redact certain things. And again, you talked about employee personnel files. So in Washington state, is an employee personnel file a public
record? With certain exceptions. They are, in general, because we as an agency create them, right? So you hire somebody and that sort of stuff. But there is certain material that's redacted out of there, such as addresses, phone numbers, social security numbers, that protects their personal. But you can name. So if you want my record, John Murphy, as a former deputy fire chief of my department, you know, you have to put in a public records request. And it has to. So one of the things I think we need to talk to is, you just can't walk into the department and say, hey, I want John Murphy's personnel file. So it has to go through a formal process. It has to be reviewed.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in terms of how people request and how we should respond to that. But, you know, getting to think about what is a public record, what we would have to release, again, gets back to understanding law, because you're exactly right. If in Ohio you come in and ask for John Murphy's personnel file, you're entitled to it as a requester. But I have an obligation as the owner, holder of the records, to make sure I'm not releasing your social security number, or with respect to police and firefighters, your home address. Your cell phone, if you've got in your file a direct deposit for your bank, you know, that information is going to be removed or redacted from your file, and we'll tell the person we've redacted, you know, certain personal identification, personal, you know, other information from your file. It's not subject to release. So
here's another challenge for me as an elected official, that I have to file with the PDC, the Public Disclosure Commission, of my financial largesse. And so is that subject to a public records request?
Well, you know,
because
in Ohio, it would be subject to a request, but those records, although they're public records, they're held by a public agency, are another example of records which are not subject to release. The law provides for an exception for your personal information. So our ethics commission is going to make sure that you are filing those forms, that you don't have any ethical issues with respect to your holdings or other financial dealings, but the general public is not, in Ohio, is not going to get a copy of that. But
no, you know, and there's always a knock on the door for that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I wanted to bring this up, because I think it's important that people understand that if you're a public office, and for purposes of our lecture today, we're going to make the assumption that you are. We're going to tell you, listen, you're a fire department, whether you're a fire district, nonprofit corporation, county, township, village, city department, you're probably going to be labeled as a public entity. And so then you have to know, you know, what are public records, or you know, what may be exempt, what records don't you have to disclose as a matter of law? Important to know. But one of the things in determining what a public record is don't think about the old paper documents only that John and I talked about, you know, boxes and mold and water and rats and, you know, so forth. You have to think about, you know, modern records, which are as we talk about, are electronic in nature. So the electronic records may be video surveillance. They may be audio recordings. They may be photographs that people are taking on a scene, you know, that we record so much electronically, because it's easy to store and quick to compile. But all of the electronics these days in Ohio would be deemed a public document. Anything, you know, electronic is treated the same as a paper document. So I think that, you know, people tend to think about the old days, and you know, here it is, it's paper, and you don't think about, I'm going to delete that. I'm going to delete that. I don't need that. I'm going to delete that. You know, again, that record, that recording, that photograph. But to the extent you do so, you may have some problems down the road. So when you're organizing, when you're putting things together, when you're thinking about all the stuff that we have that documents the activities of the office, that's another thing in Ohio. It just, you know, you get paper at the fire department that's from some vendor. It's a sales slip and it comes in. Well, it's paper and it's in my possession, but you know, it's not showing what we do. So in Ohio, things that don't document the activities of that public office, the public agency, aren't really public records. They have to have some significance, some meaning, you know, as to what we're doing. So if we think about we need to preserve all of our documents, our public records. That means, how do we store the paper? We also need to think about how we store electronically, because that's also going to be important for the retrieval process. And I think, you know, everybody should have a very good records storage management practice, which should be documented. How you do that? And in Ohio, we generally have, you know, there's a records custodian that has to take some classes and understand the process. And then John had already talked about, you know, if somebody comes in and makes a public records request, you talk about the side that, you know, I want these documents and how people react. And, you know, that's one of the things I think frustrates a lot of people is we get members of the public who want to inundate the public office, the fire department, with record requests. We have a case where we represent a private fire company. And I've had other, I have a fire district we've represented that they get tons and tons and tons of public records. And sometimes there's a disgruntled resident. Maybe it's a, you know, competitor, you know, whoever it could be, you know, just somebody who's got a grudge, but they're constantly making public records requests. And as distasteful as it is, you know, you still have to respond to them appropriately. You know, you can't say we're not giving it to you because of the records, because we don't like you. And so, John, maybe you have some comments about, you know, when those record requests come in, you know, what are some of the proper ways to respond to them?
Well, we in our state have a time period that you have to respond to a record, you know, a written record request. So anybody who comes who wants a record has to formally request it. We have a form that they fill out, and they you can get it online, and you can, you know, make the request. We go through, as you said, there's a records management position in there, and in my department, I was a records management officer. And so I would review all of the requests for records that came in, and then I'd make a determination of whether it was a legitimate request or there's more information required, or if it's a medical record, we'd have to get the patient's clearance to allow that to be released, which I don't think I've ever gotten a successful one on that side. But we go through a process of evaluating whether we can or cannot release it. And sometimes I would go to our outside counsel to say, hey, you know, can we release the record under this records request format? Sometimes we say no. And so sometimes we'll get sued because we failed to follow something. But that's why I always would go to outside counsel, because I wanted their input into, you know, how this, you know, are we legitimizing the no answer. There is a rule here that prohibits those frivolous requests for records, because the records request has to be for a legitimate purpose. So if it's to harass or vex an organization, those aren't permissible. And so if you get Mrs. Smith down the street is filing 100 records requests a week because the fire truck goes by her house 100 times a week, those aren't legitimate requests for records, and we could deny every one of those. However, if there's something that we deem to be a legitimate request, and that's basically our purview, we can say yay or nay. And so, and that sort of protects, you know, us from doing unnecessary work, because some people may ask for records that are 20, 25 years ago, which we don't have it anymore, because under the state of Washington's records management system, which is a book similar to the one you showed, it's we can get rid of and destroy legitimately certain records that we do not have to hold in perpetuity. So commissioner, meeting records, financial records, our budget, you know, those sorts of things, meetings to minutes from the elected officials, and a couple other things we have to keep forever. But like EMS reports, you know, there's a statute of limitations on those. So we can get rid of those after a certain period of time based on our statute of limitations is generally 3 years for medical mal. And then, but we will keep them for 5 or 6 years because, quite frankly, we get lazy when it comes to destroying the records in there. And we got one person that manages those records, and they have other things to do. So, you know, we may store them up in the box in the attic somewhere for a long period of time before they get destroyed. And then there's a process for that too. You know, the paper needs to be shredded. Electronics, there's a certain process to get rid of electronic records. So we have a lot to do.
In Ohio, somebody who makes a request, interestingly enough, and it drives people crazy, does not have to, by law, identify themselves. They can show up and request a particular record. And we've had some where it's anonymous email and said, and the response is, please, you know, scan in the records and send it back to this email address. And yet, and you have to, as long as it's a legitimate request. You can't force somebody to give you your name, address, or why you want the record, because Ohio favors full disclosure. So the next thing, once you get the request, and for us, it's determining is the record properly identified. In other words, can we figure out what they really want, or is, you know, we get some requests that just makes no sense. It's so broad. It's got, you know, 50 years of records. It's just unburdensome. So our courts will basically say you need to identify the record with specificity, and the request can't be burdensome. So if we can, you know, readily retrieve the record, we'll do that. But it can't be for, you know, again, no. We're not going to permit vexatious request. But the problem becomes, you know, you get one and it's a legitimate request. Then you get, you know, a week later, you get for more information, and they keep making requests that are on each individual request is a valid request for specific documents. We just don't like it because there are so many, and that becomes the real problem. Because, you know, is that harassment, or, you know, does a person have a legitimate reason to want it? And again, in Ohio, we can't ask why they want it, so it makes it a little bit harder. But, you know, we end up, the fiscal officers get real, and records custodians get very testy about the people, because they view that as just creating unneeded work for them. And so when we talk about having outside counsel, you referenced, you know, reviewing the requests and determining what can and should be released. Another reason we do that is that third party objective review, because maybe our internal person says, I'm not releasing them. They don't need it. I don't know why they want it. I'm not doing that work. And so the lawyer may look at it and say, listen, I've reviewed this request. It's reasonable. It's not vexatious. It's not, you know, harassment. You have that record. It's not so old that you've already gotten rid of it. So you need to release it. And so it's sort of that check and balance with the fire department, making sure that you're not making a decision that really can't be supported.
One of the records requests we get is from the media on certain calls, or, you know, who was involved and where was the house, and can you give us details? And so we had a hell of a time, I think, initially, when we really started thinking about releasing records, because back in the day, which is in the 70s for me, how old were you then, Chip? Anyway, you know, we get a media request and we just talk to the media. You know, we tell them, you know, they had a big fire at John Murphy's house, or there's, you know, a lot of damage done there, and blah, blah, blah. We just blat it all out. And then we get these sort of controlled, like, you need to bring in the information the media gets. And so now it's, you know, 100 blocks. You know, we don't give names. We try not to provide pictures. And then we set up a whole PIO staff, you know, people that will actually respond to the media and talk to the media, work with the media. And so if you satisfy the media need, I think you're going to cut down several of your responses or requests for medical information or whatever happened on, you know, the 100 block of such and such. So that has cut that down quite a bit. And our adage, our sort of philosophy on that is that, you know, media has like a 24-hour shelf life. So, you know, if you don't give it to them right away, they sort of lose interest in it and they'll move on to the next. But we always, again, on media requests, we used to talk to outside counsel and ask if this is a legitimate a request for information, because does the public need to know? And so if there's a hazardous situation, like, you know, my house exploded because I have natural gas that's piped in from the local purveyor of natural gas. And that's a public hazard. And so people probably need to know, did my house blow up because I have my propane system failed? Well, they don't need to know that. They need to know, this is the sensationalism of my whole house exploded. But I'm on propane. So is that an emergency that the public needs to know about? So we're sort of, you know, we sort of hedge and fudge on those sort of media requests. Just because, you know, do they need to know? And again, the sort of the media shelf life is like 24 hours, so they'll move on to something different. I think the other thing too, Chip, is that firefighters need to understand. And so, you know, using department computers to correspond, is that a public record? So if I send you an email onto my fire station computer and it's, you know, maybe salacious or maybe insulting or maybe complimentary, does the public need to, do they have the right to know that, you know, the fire chief from this organization sent, you know, an email to the fire chief of another organization out of state? And so can there be a records request for all the emails occurring between, you know, John Murphy and Chip Comstock in Ohio?
You know, again, and that's why sometimes you have to have that lawyer look at it. So if you said, I want any and all emails from Chip Comstock in Ohio, they'd say that's way too broad. Any and all? No, you got to define the period. Well, I want the emails from Chip Comstock for 2023? Nah, that still sounds too broad for us. I want the emails for March of 2024 between Chip Comstock and John Murphy. Ah, we can pull those. We've narrowed that scope down. Now, the interesting thing is then we look at the emails and we say, I write you an email saying we need to discuss mutual aid, or there's an issue with one of your personnel, or you know, we're going back and forth as to activities. But what happens when you send that email, or I send you the email? It says, "Hey, do you want to meet? Do you want to go for drinks on Friday night? You know, at this bar after hours?" Does that email demonstrate the activities of the office? Does it demonstrate what the fire department's doing? Well, I suppose one could argue that we're talking about going to drinks. If I sent that on during my work hours, you know, that to show that, hey, instead of working at the fire department job, he's arranging to go out, and maybe that's a legitimate issue that why it's important. But a lot of times when people are conducting business on department computers that really has nothing to do with the department, it may arguably not be a public record, but you have to assume that somebody, if it's on a public computer, that the computer itself and all of its contents are subject to review unless there's an exception to the public records. Now, conversely, John, that some people have to think, well, I don't want to do anything on the department computer because somebody's going to get it. So instead, I'm going to do everything on my personal computer, and I'm going to do everything on my iPhone, because we know then it's not the public computer, and I've insulated myself. Problem with in Ohio, anyways, is that's no insulation if you're doing work about the public entity. So the same thing, I'm on my phone and texting you about I have concerns about, you know, this local building and the hazards it might present. That's a public record. We're talking about, you know, public matters, concerns I have, you know, part of my job. And so if somebody made a public records request to my, you know, about emails to you regarding this particular business, or, you know, again, concerns I have, those documents may very well be public records. And again, I don't need that anymore, I'm done, I'm going to create space, I'm going to delete that, that could cause an issue. I get stuff all the time on my phone that says, I want to send you, I get a text message, and it's important because it has to do with some issue that's come up. I don't want to store a million text messages on my phone. So I'll a lot of times screenshot them and save the screenshots, or find ways to hang on to them. On emails, I get an email on my personal phone. A lot of times I will, or personal email that's department related, I'll send that on. So there's a record of it on a public email account, or, you know, and on the public computer. So I've tried to preserve that. The one thing I think happens a lot when you talk about, you know, creating public records. One of the issues I have, again, we just referenced it briefly, is taking a picture on your phone. I know people would be surprised to know that there are occasions when firefighters take pictures at emergency scenes of, you know, working house fires, of the auto accident crash, and they are in fact documenting the activities of their position. And so those documents, those photographs taken on their personal phone, can be an issue. And if somebody's destroyed those, they could be, they've deleted them, could in fact be charged with deleting a public record. I know when we had the recent train derailment in Northeast Ohio a year ago, there were lawyers making requests under public records law, and in some cases with respect to subpoenas issued, that they wanted all photographs taken, you know, on personal or department cameras, iPads, you know, phones, for photographs. So, you know, again, people don't realize that a lot of those photographs they take are important. People are going to be aware of it. Somebody took a photograph and they're going to want to have that reproduced for them. which gets sort of to, you know, how long do you have to say these things? You talked about that again in different, in Ohio, you can get rid of some things quickly. Just a phone message called John back. I call you back. I don't need to save that anymore. I can get rid of that. But some are much longer, and we have what's called a record retention schedule. Depending on the type of record it is, will tell me how long I have to save it before we can even begin to think about getting rid of it. And that's going to depend on the type of record. I would assume various states have similar variations. And I think you kind of suggested Washington.
So just you brought up a couple of good points. One is that I always tell, and I don't do it anymore because I don't have anybody working for me, but I always used to tell my firefighters that there's no expectation of privacy when you're using department communications equipment. So you're texting, even on your phone, something that, you know, you're doing while I'm paying for your time in the fire station, then that text belongs to me, right? And if I needed it. So one of the things that was brought up, we talked about text messages, you know, is that a public, is that part of the public records process? And a few years ago, the former mayor, Jenny Durkin, from the city of Seattle, was basically charged with destruction of public or public record by deleting thousands of text messages off her phones and other public officials in the city of Seattle during Black Lives Movement times in the city of Seattle. And the prosecutor basically said they're not going to charge you with a crime for deleting, you know, these sort of text messages, which actually belong to the public. And a lot of it came that part of the programming, because the cities had these phones that were sponsored by the city, deleted texts every 60 days, right off. And they don't store them. They didn't save them. They didn't do anything with them. They just, based on a storage space issues, they just deleted them. And so, you know, 90 days ago, you didn't have any text messages because your technology services basically eliminated them as part of a policy that the organization has, is that every 60 days or 90 days or whatever the time period is, we're going to delete your emails. We're going to delete your text messages. And I think we need to caution, people that are listening to this, is that an appropriate process, I guess, to save storage space, that you're going to delete text messages after a certain time? And I think one of the things we need to look at, and every state is a little bit different. So for an example, the records retention policies here in the state of Washington basically dictate and outline when you can delete, you know, certain information that's created as part of the public record. So as I said, there's certain things that are kept in perpetuity. There are certain things that are kept for 3 years or 5 years. And so you can delete all of those sorts of things, but you need to have a schedule. You need to have a policy in your organization that's basically following the state law. And then, you know, then the question comes, are you in a safe harbor because you followed the law and you deleted stuff that may be important to somebody's, you know, trying to sue your department? And so, you know, the question is, as long as you've, from my perspective, following the law is important. Having a policy, again, is important. And then educating your people as to, if you're going to delete a public record, is it appropriate to do it? Is it timely? And is it necessary? So is it part of the record that's been, like, if you're getting departments getting sued and you have a records preservation letter from, you know, the opposing counsel, and even though that file may be in the queue to delete, can you delete the file? And my answer would be, I would keep it until the lawsuit's over with, because you're going to get, you know, a spoliation charge, and it may jeopardize, you know, your defense.
Yeah. You know, you talk about records retention schedule and electronics, deletion of text messages. I would tell people that if you've got dash cams, right? You got dash cams or surveillance videos.
Or cameras.
I'm willing to bet they're on a cycle, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, or maybe less. And so you need to make sure that those, at the very least, that any deletion of that is covered by a policy, a records retention schedule or policy. It says it is, in fact, permissible to delete items after, you know, recycled storage on your cameras after 90 days, unless, again, there's been a public records request made or there's been some event, in which case the department should try to strive for it. So I think, you know, you talk about having well-defined policy and, you know, a policy that addresses record retentions, the release of that. Ohio mandates a public records policy for management purposes. You can go right online for your Ohio Attorney General site and get it. It's pretty straightforward. I like to amend it, add some additional things. But again, that policy can talk about not only what a public records is, how you store it, you know, how you respond to it. It should give you a lot of the information that we're talking about needing. Because again, people aren't thinking about that text messages that they just got rid of or the surveillance video they just got rid of. You know, and these are the issues that I think we tried to raise from the beginning, that we're no longer in the old paper document mode, right? We have to think about how we're going to deal with, release, manage the electronics, you know, and that includes that photograph that the guy takes at the fire scene on his personal phone. You should have a digital imagery policy that talks about how you take them, where you take them, and how you store the items. Because again, that will address some of the, you know, not just the documents, and it'll take care of photographs as well.
Yeah, I think the other thing that just came to mind is that if you're storing things electronically now, you need to make sure that you have a very robust firewall to prevent people trying to poke and prod around in your hardware and your storage areas because of the ransomware issues. I know that there's been a couple of hospitals have been shut down and healthcare systems, creating an environment where there's millions of dollars of money being requested by ransomware threats. And so, you know, and we're as a public agency, we hold a lot of privileged information. We hold, like, on the medical forms, you know, it's the name, it's the date of birth, sometimes a partial social security number, their insurance numbers, those sorts of things. And so that's information that, you know, these hackers want. And so, which is probably a whole nother discussion about public records, but I think we need to protect them from unauthorized access.
Disclosure. Yeah. I 100% agree. The only thing I'm going to add to that, John, which I think is a great point, that we can't forget in terms of our records management that we do have to protect certain records, go above and beyond that. The other thing is, in case there is a failure, I definitely won't get into this in any detail today because we definitely don't have a time, but there is a difference, and you have to really understand it. You may have to request help and understand it, but there's different types of cyber insurance coverage, and you know, you're looking for, there's a lot of different things that go wrong with respect to that information, somebody trying to hack it, and some insurance policies are very encompassing and some are not. And so people who are trying to protect the accident, you know, their financial status against a ransomware attack or a unplanned release of records, particularly medical records, for whatever nefarious reason, better make sure that they do have at least a good, and I don't know if workers' comp would necessarily cover it. So, you know, what is the liability policy and what, or policies, and what do they cover, and having an understanding of that as it relates to specifically protecting your records. So, John, I think we've been going, we're almost past our time, I think, today.
Yeah, I agree. I think just to kind of summarize, every state has a records retention manual. Like Chip showed his. If I had one, I'd show mine, but the state of Washington, every state's got one. They're fairly similar, but maybe different in certain areas. But the issue deals with, you know, identifying yourself as a public entity, creating records for the public good. You know, your attorneys will depend on your record keeping and management skills, that you have to have certain personnel in the organization to review records requests and release them. You need to have a, you know, robust storage of that. And I think that, you know, if you're going to convert from paper to electronic, You know, is there the desire and the money to, you know, scan all those sort of paper records into an electronic format, which is probably the way to go today. There are services and companies out there that will do that. And then I think that you have to remember that, you know, you create a record for the public good, and the falsifying the records, as we talked about earlier, doesn't do your organization any good. The people that create false records are going to get, you know, maybe civilly or criminally charged with creating those particular records. And in order to keep your organization legally safe, I think you need to follow the rules. And for records management and record storage, you have, every state has its own system of how to do that. It's incorporated into your state law. And so you just need to pay attention to those sort of details. So without further ado.
Till the next time.
With a riveting topic between the Chip and the John Chip.
And we hope to see everybody at FDIC Indianapolis.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.